are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. I'm joined by Tony East. You can follow him on Twitter at TEastNBA for coverage of the Indiana Pacers on Locked On Pacers, as well as coverage of the Indiana Fever and lots of other things. Tony, I've been in Vegas for 5 days. My reality's a little warped. Time is more of a concept than like a structural thing. I'm dealing with the Vegas residual reality hangover. How are you?
I've been in Indiana, so whatever the opposite of what you are, that's what I'm at golfing and got really burnt outside. I've been learning chess. Like, what's the opposite speed of Vegas? That's how I've been living the last 5 days.
I definitely played cards until 3 and then got up at 7 and recorded a podcast and then got to the airport. And yeah, it's been wild. On today's show, we're going to talk about news that the Indiana Pacers may be close finally to making the offer for DeAndre Ayton. We'll see what's going on with that. We'll get Tony's thoughts on that whole situation in Indiana and that evolving situation. In the second segment, we're going to talk about the rookies and the top rookies at Summer League, including another dynamite performance from Chet Holmgren, as well as a really great night from Jabari Smith Jr., and about how really like all the rookies have looked great so far in Summer League. Really, really promising class so far out in Vegas. And the third segment, the take foul. May just be no more. Let's get started right here, though, as we thank you for making us your first listen each and every day. Today, Brian Windhorst reported the Indiana Pacers are is it serious possibility? Serious consider, what's the exact wording on the report, Tony?
If I knew the exact wording, I would tell you right now. The reason I don't is because Mr. Windhorst, as we do our finger pointings for the YouTube crowd, and Jake Fisher and Zach Lowe and Mark Stein, there's a lot of similar verbiage that means kind of the same thing, but it could also be a sign and trade. So there's a lot of words out there that say, yeah, this is something that could happen very soon, but between a Brogdon physical and the Pacers being just shy of max space, it's not quite imminent yet, is basically what they're all telling you.
So the holdup is supposedly the Brogdon deal, which was supposed to get cleared out on Saturday. And everybody was like, today's the day. And then that didn't happen. There's reports that Brogdon, what's holding it up is Brogdon hasn't taken his physical yet. Is that accurate? Do I have that right?
Yeah, I had to research this, but apparently, and I don't want to get too nerdy into it because this is a podcast, but there's a difference between a trade being official and complete. And so official is when they call it into the league, and complete's when all the physicals are done. So that's how press conferences can happen before it's complete, whatever. So Brogdon got traded, but he hadn't gone to Boston yet. I do know this part because I covered Brogdon for a long time. He was in Tanzania for part of this offseason installing water wells as part of his charity foundation. Miles Turner was there. Tim Frazier was there. A couple other NBA players are over there. So that's part of where he was instead of the United States when he got traded. And then he went to Vegas for a little bit. He was on the Woj pod, and Woj was talking about where he's been. And I think now he's in Boston, or he's soon to be in Boston for his physical. So trade's not like completely complete yet, but as official, it's all wording that doesn't really matter. But that's the current state of things.
I have a question here. Is anybody else just like a little bit nervous? Just because I'm like, I personally would want the physical done soon, given that Malcolm literally sat out most of last year because they didn't want his Achilles to explode. So, like, given his injury history, when I see physical not completed yet, it's not that like I'm like, oh, they know something. It's the opposite. They haven't looked yet. Like it's fine. He's been doing amazing work. That's great. That's awesome. That's water wells. That's incredible, right? But I'm like, I'll just like a little bit. Like you should probably check on that before everyone thinks that this thing is done, because this has serious ramifications for everybody, right?
That's a big deal. I mean, look, maybe it's bad enough that things get changed, but like even in the past, like the Pacers traded for Caris LeVert and learned of the physical process that he had kidney cancer, and they still went. You know, they still went through with it. It's like,
yeah,
it has to be really bad to like dynamically change what the trade is, if that makes sense.
That is absolutely true. So the presumption here is that Brogdon gets traded, that gets completed, that clears up the space for them to sign Ayton in the sign-in trade, and then Miles Turner goes to Phoenix. That's like what we're expecting, right?
Yeah. I'll go with yeah. So the Pacers can get to max space after the Brogdon trade without trading Turner. They could just dump Goga Batadze or Daniel Tice on some poor other team, and then they could just sign him outright. But that requires a lot of cooperation from other teams, and if they just negotiate directly with the Suns, then it's just over. And Bill Duffy represents both Miles Turner and DeAndre Ayton.
I noticed that. Always I noticed that.
Always an interesting wrinkle in this stuff. So, yeah, they like if it's just Turner for Ayton, they could do that now. Like that is not contingent on Brogdon, but the cap space portion to me, and the reason that being a discussion factor matters is the Pacers can really heat up the pressure on Phoenix or negotiate better if they could say we could get max space very easily. You know, we could do it. We could screw you guys. So that's where it comes into play more so is you know, as Windhorst has said many times, a lot of stuff in the offseason is a negotiating tactic.
Yeah.
And that's where the Pacers can get some power back because Ayton has a ton of leverage. He's the guy picking his team. And the Suns have leverage because they have match rights. And the Pacers are just like, we would like this guy, but they don't have a lot of leverage. So getting to max space and making it as tough as possible on the Suns is their way of getting back into this. And that's why the Brogdon trade going through does change the timeline, things like that.
The other issue here, obviously, is Kevin Durant.
Yeah,
that's the wrinkle in this, which is so if you're trying to figure out how this works and like how like what does Kevin Durant have to do with it, it's pretty simple. If the Pacers sign Ayton to an offer sheet instead of agreeing to a sign and trade, if they sign into an offer sheet, the Suns, that's it for them. They're either losing Ayton for nothing or they can't and they can't include him in a sign and trade with the Nets, or they retain him. And now they've signed him, and they also can't move him for a duration after agreeing to that extension, to that new deal. It wouldn't be an extension, being that new deal, that matching the offer sheet for them. I have been wondering if this is external pressure being applied, but it sounds very much like the Indiana Pacers genuinely want to add Ayton. I'm a little confused, given their direction and where they're going and everything. Like, Tyrese Haliburton, DeAndre Ayton is a good core with Mathurin, but it just seems weird to be like, hey, we're rebuilding, so we're gonna give this guy that nobody else really wants to give the money to a lot of money. Is that, am I weird for thinking that's weird, Tony?
No, I understand that too, and I've kind of said that on Locked On Pacers. To finish up the point on the Nets part, like, Sean Marks and the Nets are praying that this is a verbal agreement and no signatures.
Yeah,
no signatures happen, no pens are exchanged, so that it could be folded into a three-team deal. But yeah, from the Pacers' side, you know, like the argument pro Ayton is pretty obvious, right? He's young and good. Hey, all right, we're a rebuilding team. We like young and good things. But like if you give Ayton his max or close to it, and then next summer you pay Tyrese Haliburton and whatever other guys from that 2020 class, you know, they got Nesmith on their team now, they have Jalen Smith on this team, end up popping, like that's your team. That's it. So like you're either really confident that that pairing can work and this roster can work out in Indiana, or it's not the gamble for you right now. And so maybe it is more external pressure. And like they would have max cap space right now if they didn't sign Jalen Smith on the first day they legally could. Like I'm sure they knew that when they did it, you know. So a lot of factors suggest that maybe it is a little bit of a pressure tactic. But at the same time, when a former number one pick is available, you know, and you're a franchise who's never employed a single number one pick ever,
it's a pressure tactic. But pressure for who? Again, why would they do that? I listened to the ESPN Daily with Brian, and it was incredible. So I've just been doing that in my head all day. We're going to take a break. If you want to hear more about the Pacers situation and all the conundrums and goings-on, check out Locked On Pacers with Tony, and that he's got the full breakdown on all this stuff for you. So check that out right now. Go check out Locked On Pacers to get the latest from Tony and the full breakdown on all the permutations of this complicated thing, and we'll keep you updated as news warrants here on Locked On NBA. But for now, we're gonna take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the rookies out in summer league, including a big Chet performance. Jabari has himself a good offensive night, and really we just gotta talk about everybody's been good. What a positive, nice story. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about Built Bar. From the people who invented Healthy and Tasty comes the latest gift to your taste buds. You've probably tried the amazing Coconut Brownie Chunk Built Bar, but guess what? Your friends at Built have given Coconut Brownie Chunk the Puffs treatment. That's right. The Coconut Brownie Chunk Built Bar flavor you love in a deliciously chewy marshmallow covered in 100% real chocolate. It's like a fluffy cloud of coconut brownie goodness. Stop drooling and listen. They're good for you. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and all delicious. They're only here for a limited time. So go to Built.com right now to make sure you don't miss out. They're going fast because they taste amazing. All Built Bars are made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. Delicious coconut, rich sweet brownie, creamy marshmallow. Stop getting that in your head and get to Built.com to order your box of Coconut Brownie Chunk Built Puffs right now. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15, L-O-C-K-E-D-1-5, and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us, making part of your week. Joining us on a Tuesday, I'm Matt Moore alongside Tony East, and we're going to talk a little bit about Summer League. And got to tell you, good vibes out in Vegas. It was just a good vibes week when I was out there, Tony, mostly because I didn't stay long enough for things to get weird. But in general, also, just like things have been very positive. Everybody's very happy. Like, there's no draft pick that you're like, ooh, little, that's none of that. Like, it's been pretty good. Like, it's just been great overall. And that continued in today's and tonight's games where, really, for me, one of the important ones was actually before we got to what was supposed to be the main event, which was not. We'll get to that in a second. But Jabari Smith had some bad shooting. And it was funny watching the timeline when he was having these bad shooting games because everybody was like, not worried about the shot. Love the aggressiveness and the defense and this and this. Not worried about the shot. And it wasn't that I was worried about the shot because everybody knows Jabari Smith can shoot. It was just funny that everybody was falling over themselves to be like, and this is where I always get in trouble because I just kind of want to be like, yeah, it's okay. We could just say that he didn't shoot well. Like, we could just say that it's just a game in Summer League. We don't have to be like, you know, over time or like this. It's like, okay, he shot badly. He'll probably shoot better next game. And guess what? In Monday's game versus the San Antonio Spurs, Jabari goes 6 of 12 from the field for 19 points, along with 9 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, and a block, plus 23. More importantly, the defense continues to really shine for Jabari. That, to me, has kind of been the differentiator between him and the other two, is that I think, or him and Paolo, rather, is that Paolo was the most impressive rookie I saw in Vegas, bar none. And like that, everyone said that. Like, they're just, you watched Paolo Banchero step on the floor and you were just like, wow. Like, Paolo Banchero is incredible. Handling the ball, looks huge, all these type of things. But Jabari, one of the positive things is that he looks like a two-way player. Like, he's going to have, like, be a really good defender. And he's able to give them this offensive stuff. Got some better guard play tonight out of the Rockets, and that helped them. The big kind of game on the slate was supposed to be 1 versus 2, which was Paolo Banchero versus Chet Holmgren, Orlando versus OKC. But the Orlando Magic, in my opinion, very rightfully and smartly decided to shut down Banchero for the rest of Summer League. There's no reason for him to be. There's honestly no reason for Chet to be playing. Like, there's no reason. We saw Chet in Utah, and early on here, Chet had a great game, again, versus Orlando, no Banchero, but Holmgren finishes 7 of 10 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, including a step back off of a DHO, which was just a thing of beauty, 16 points, 10 boards, 2 assists, 2 blocks. The blocks continue to be the most impressive part of his game. Tony, the top three in the draft, everyone kind of talked about this, about how it was very narrow, and it could have gone either way. And the thought was really, like, you're good if you get one of those three guys. It doesn't really matter where you land. If you get one of those three guys, you're good. And all three guys have looked really good in Summer League so far.
Yeah, and they've all kind of fit the billing of what everybody thought they'd be awesome at, which is what I've kind of enjoyed. Like, Jabari Smith, his big appeal beyond many things, was like, hey, this guy's floor. Like, if he sucks at everything that he didn't do well at Auburn, he's a really athletic 3-and-D player. That's still a really good pick. And lo and behold, in Vegas, this guy's playing great defense. And tonight, 3 of 5 from deep, had 2 steals and a block, 9 rebounds. Like, showed off all that, 19 points. And the Rockets are so fascinating. Like, Tari Eason has looked great off the bounce. His defense looks aggressive. I really liked him in this draft. Ty Washington's had some nice passing moments. But Jabari has popped even with the ball in his hands every so often. So they've been getting a lot out of their rookies, and Jabari's appeal in the draft has really shown through. Chet's appeal in the draft, being extremely unique and being able to be – I don't really know how to describe Chet's appeal besides just like no one can do this. Like, no one can do what Chet can do at his size and his defensive ability. And everybody was like, yeah, but he's skinny. But that doesn't matter when he can block two shots and get 10 rebounds and hit two threes and have 16 and 10. Like, no one could contain him at all. So it was he's been a delight. And Paolo is just such a well-rounded offensive player. His handle is incredible for his size. And the Magic should have held him out. That whip, that cross-court whip pass he had from the elbow that's been clipped by like everybody ever was just amazing. I was hoping he'd play against Chet, but they've all looked awesome. They've all looked like great picks, and I don't think any of these teams in the top three will be upset that they got one of those guys.
They will probably either Wednesday or Friday of the opening week slate Orlando versus OKC on ESPN, and that's going to be an absolutely phenomenal game. It's just going to be a lot of fun to watch. Really excited for the matchup, and I'm glad, honestly, a little bit that we're getting it then and not in Summer League, because like, these guys look really terrific. Yeah, Chet. Look, Chet continues to be. It's interesting the way that if you talk to like the league people that I talked to in Vegas, said, you know, who's been most impressive? Everyone starts with Paolo. If you say like, who has impressed you the most? It's been Chet. So like, Paolo was like, wow. And Chet was more like, okay, we had some questions, but like, that's gonna work. That's really going to work. Jabari, honestly, I was a little worried because his first game, I was pretty concerned because he wasn't able to create anything on his own. They really got up into him defensively, and he was struggling. He settled in, and a lot of it's just like guys getting over the nerves. I think it, as much as basketball as they've played, and it is, it's like, well, it's just summer. Like, yeah, but it's like, that's your first time in an NBA jersey. It's your first time in an NBA jersey. You're at Summer League. ESPN's on the sideline. All these players are courtside. Like, that's part of it is like, you know, a lot of really big time players will just come and sit courtside at these games, and you're just like, whoa, like, I'm in the show, even though you're not yet, because you're, you know, not
playing summer
because you're playing at Summer League, and there's 10 fouls, and most of these guys are not going to be on rosters, but, and you practice for like half a second. But Jabari, I'm pretty impressed that Jabari settled in the way that he has. Like, he's gotten better every single game, and that to me is really encouraging. But it's not just him. You know, Jaden Ivey gets hurt 13 seconds in, but he was so explosive, you know, in the second game. He was so explosive in that first game. He was so explosive out of the box. Like, he just looks incredible already. Mathurin looks great. Keegan Murray, I've watched more Keegan Murray than any of the other prospects. And it's what I loved about Keegan is that there was no stretch where it was like he was like taking over or trying to take over or forcing things. And so I would be like, wow, kind of a quiet game for Keegan. And I would look up and it's like, oh, he has 17, 6, and 5. Like, just kind of like got the job done, just like found his way to be productive. So I'm honestly, for what was rightfully billed as a very weak draft, I'm pretty encouraged. I think this is shaping up to look like a really, even relative to when I adjust everything for Summer League expectations, this class in particular has really impressed me with their play this week.
Yeah, it's a shame that Shaden and Dyson got hurt in their first games, because you're right. All the top six have reached the calling expected of them. You know, you never want to see these guys do bad, but when they do bad, it's usually like, oh, crap. You know, what's going to happen with this guy? But they've all done well, and they've all done well at the stuff they were supposed to do well at, which sounds dumb, but I think that's usually telling to me of, like, what their role could be in the league. Like, Mathurin playing off the ball for Indiana. Like, that's what he's going to do. Keegan Murray being a quiet 15-point guy for the Kings. That's what he's going to do. You know, Jabari Smith hitting 3-for-5 from deep when he's slotted next to Jalen Green. That's what he's going to do. Those kind of things are interesting to me. That said, we've reached the end of a Summer League segment, so I have to be Mr. Wet Blanket. Kevin Knox won Summer League MVP, if I recall correctly, or was close to winning it. Chris Dunn was really good in Summer League, if I recall correctly.
Hey, time will tell on Chris Dunn. I'm not giving up on Chris Dunn.
I have been so tempted to make a Chris Dunn KD trader quest joke the entire offseason and have not done it yet. So this is my that is me doing it just by saying that sentence out loud. So yes, summer league playing well is generally good. You don't want to play bad in summer league. It also could mean absolutely nothing at all, but it is good, and all these franchises will be happy to see their rookies doing well. And we're currently seeing Deuce McBride and Quentin Grimes absolutely dominate for the Summer Knicks. They have a combined 40 points for that squad as we speak. So those two guys are sophomores, but they are also impressing in Summer League as sophomores are supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, Moses Moody, I think, was in his one game. Like, I congrats to Moses Moody for the single game, come in, obliterate everything, and the Warriors be like, okay, we just wanted to see, just wanted to get you some reps. Right. Fair enough, you're too good to be here.
Of that, like, Duarte shows up, 16 points on 7 shots in 20 minutes. You're like, yep, you're good. All right, thanks for flying out.
Thanks for working out with the guys. Appreciate it, yeah. Guys. Have a good summer. We'll see.
You made all rookie? All right, just one game.
One game. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about, it's sounding a lot like the biggest officiating scourge in the NBA is going away next season. And no, I don't mean Scott Foster. We'll talk about that when we come back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including the old YouTubes, where you can catch a video version of the show. Back here with Tony East. Tony, we're started circulating at the Board of Governors meeting out in Las Vegas, sounding like we're going to get the takeaway, or the take foul is going to be taken away. It's going to be pretty easy solution. They test drove this in the G League. This has always been the easiest solution to it. You try one of those take fouls, it's one free throw, and they retain possession of the ball. I like this solution. And the reason I like this solution is that I like anything that adds a level of complex strategy to it. And you can take this like a number of ways. You could just be like, well, no, you just shouldn't do that. You could give up a 4-point play, and that's bad. You should not give up 2-point. You should not give up, you know, 4 points on one possession. A 4.0 possession is very, very bad for you. But if you're in a position where you're like, man, I gotta get a timeout, or I've gotta get this, like, the team slowed down, like, we gotta break momentum. Or if you're just like, we're doing well enough in our half court, we honestly can give up the free throw and live with a 1 point per possession mark here. I think it adds a level of complexity. It's hard to kind of decide that, obviously, in the moment. So you're going to have to, like, kind of scheme it and be like, hey, here's what we're doing. If you see De'Aaron Fox on a breakaway, maybe go ahead and take the take foul, or some of these different permutations. While also, I think in general, we'll just see a massive, huge reduction in take fouls. We'll just, in general, these will be significantly less, because coaches are going to be like, I don't want to give up a point and possession. I don't want to give up the possibility of a 3-point play, 4-point play. Potentially 5 if you get the 4-point play after the free throw. So there's all these, like, permutations of racking up these really swinging possessions. So to me, this is a great solution. It should have been done last year. Good riddance to the take foul.
To me, at the simplest level of this, like, a foul is a punishment, right? Like, you broke a rule. You committed harsh contact. And yet, people were fouling on purpose. They're doing something with the punishment on purpose, which means the punishment isn't strong enough. Like, that's a really stupid way of describing it. That's why I always hated the take foul. They're doing something that's supposed to be a punishment, air quotes, and making it a positive. So by making it, now that there's a free throw in the ball, and like you said, it can be a 4-point possession, and, you know, it's no longer a benefit. They get a point out of it. Now it is not, you know, it's too strong of a punishment. That has to balance at all times. And I always go to the extremes with this stuff. Like, now if I'm on defense and my team is up by 2 with 10 seconds left and the team's on a breakaway, I'm still fouling. Like, okay, now whatever, I'm still up 1 and now I can set my defense. You know, it's not, like, perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction to me. Rick Carlisle was actually asked about it, because he's the head of the Coaches Association, during a summer league broadcast. And his big thing too was, like, game flow will speed up quite a bit. You know, we'll get more of these fast breaks that fans like. Maybe there'll be more free throws because there is this, but there will be less take fouls, which will stop the game less. So he thinks it's better for the product as well. So in terms of balancing the punishment correctly, getting rid of a stupid thing and a soulless play, I would add, yeah. I think it's just the right play overall.
The reality is, I think in part of this, what the reason that we react so viscerally to it is not just the possibility of a cool transition play. It's that those are often momentum swings. You create a steal, you get the big stop, you're out, and you have numbers. like those are the crowd senses that there's a buzz, and to just have it be like, oh, nope, we're just nope, you don't get to do that. That's against the whole spirit of sports, and it's what against all the things that makes the NBA exciting. So to me, it's a fantastic solution to the problem. It presents just enough of an added punishment, and I actually disagree with you. I don't think it's a stupid way at all. I think you put that very perfectly. I thought that was a really great encapsulation. You should a foul should be bad. Should be bad. Let's make fouls bad. And this adds that level.
It makes fouls bad, and it doesn't like favor or unfavor a team that's ahead or behind. You know, like when I thought of this originally, the other thing that I think is a soulless foul and is the, okay, we're up by three. Let's foul them so they can't shoot a three-pointer. You know, I'm like, ah, Leah, like, that's totally right. You earned it because you're up three. But I'm like, ah, that's soulless. That sucks. But that's different. That's a clear competitive advantage for the winning team that they earned, whereas take fouls, both teams have them over the course of the game. It's not like some big competitive balance swing. So, yes, I 100% think this is the right thing, and they've got the punishment slider in the correct spot on the bar.
But the real question is, what will we complain about next year, Tony?
I will complain. I'll complain about fouling up three for the rest of my life. I think Robert Flom, I know you know who that is. I don't know if everybody listening does. He said it first. It's a soulless play. And it is. It is. It's the smartest play you can make. Every team should do it if they're up three and playing defense with like 10 seconds left. But it sucks, man. It just sucks. Like, I just want to see a chance to tie. That's not even the only rule. I guess this one isn't a rule change, but that was implemented today, though.
What was the other one that was added today?
The play-in is permanent-ish now.
Let's go.
Year-by-year thing, but Woj says that the play-in is now going to be lasting for a while. I mean, no-brainer. No-brainer, right? Like, it gets tanking, a little less strong. Everybody loves the play-in games. More teams go for it. They're exciting. Everybody loves some revenue. It's a home run. Like, the NBA nailed it with this.
It was funny. The first year, when it was Steph versus LeBron, that was actually like the second year, but the first year for like the full one, right? The non-bubble play-in. Everyone was very much like, well, what's it going to be like when it's not Steph versus LeBron? Turns out, still pretty good.
Great.
Still, it's still a lot of fun. Those games were really interesting. It adds this layer of complexity on it. The biggest thing for me is that late March through April, and April's still pretty bad because everything is largely set by then, but like March can be a real drag in the NBA. It's supposed, the problem is the league schedules, basically they back schedule, right? Because they're like, we don't want the big marquee games during football season, so we're gonna backload them. You're ramping up to the playoffs, and it's this, you know, it's Warriors versus Celtics. The problem is at that point, like the Warriors and Celtics are like, well, we have our playoff spots locked. We don't have any reason to play in this game. We're tired. We've been playing basketball for 5 months, and we are getting ready for the playoffs. We're coasting. And so what would happen is, like, those games really became a drag as the teams that were out were just, like, filling in moments, and everybody else was tanking. And so what's happened is, instead, the desperation of the teams trying to get out of the play-in is palpable. Like, the Wolves, like, desperately trying to get out of the play-in late in the season. Like, that came down to the wire with them and the Nuggets. And like the Nuggets had a really terrible loss. I forget who it was to. And then the Wolves had like an equally terrible loss the same night. And that added drama is just really good for the league. The next question is going to be that midseason tournament. We'll see if they're ready to pull the trigger on that. But the play-in is no doubt, like, it's absolutely 100%. As somebody that works in the betting space also, there's a lot in there. Like, there's just, there's a lot of, like, those games, anytime you get a one-off, a lot of attention on those games, lot of action, a lot of drama. It's a good thing for the league. I am very, very happy with how the play-in has been implemented, despite how much the players complain about it, as it's not fair that they play for 5 months and then have to do it. If only there was something they could do, like, you know,
win more
games and then not have to worry about it.
I think that the only gripe I will continue to have with the plan is they had this in the bubble. If a team is really far ahead, they should somehow be out of it. And like, why are we rewarding the seventh seed? I get it. That's a stupid point that I'm making. But like, the Wolves were so far ahead of eighth that I'm like, oh, this sucks for them that they have to be a part of this like the rest of these teams. And then the bubble, they had that. I think it was four and a half games ahead or more. You automatically made the playoffs. If not, it was 8-9. So if they implemented something like that, I'd be okay with that.
I don't really get there.
I know a lot of people don't. I know I'm alone on that.
You're not alone. You're definitely not alone. There's a lot of folks that think that they're with you. I just wind up coming down on pro sports are hard. Sometimes it's not gonna be, it's gonna be, you're gonna get bad breaks. I'm sorry. This is just how it goes. Like, you know, if it, cause you, the response for me is like, well, win more games. And they're like, well, we had injuries. And it's like, I'm sorry. Everyone does. Like, everybody has, like, this is just part of it. And you deal with the best you can. You have an opportunity to make the playoffs. Go out there and win your game. And I actually go the other way a little bit where I'm like, yeah, you're so far ahead. There's zero excuse for you to lose these games. I don't care. Like, I understand shooting variance. I understand it. I understand one game. I get it. Win the game. Go. Let's go. This is sports. That's what makes it great. And that's what makes Tony East great, is that he has arguments that I find sound and compelling even when I don't agree. Make sure to check out Locked On Pacers again for more on everything that's going on with them and the Aiden situation. Thanks for joining us, everybody. You can catch John Corrales and Jake Madison on tomorrow's show on Wednesday. We'll have continued coverage for you of NBA Summer League throughout the week. Thanks for joining us. See you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.